Welcome to Trailblazing Nursing, a podcast sponsored by the University of South Florida College of Nursing. I'm Usha Menon, Dean of the College of Nursing and Senior Associate Vice President at USF Health. Every month, we'll bring you a 15-minute discussion on current topics in nursing, talking with your colleagues and experts from across the world. It gives me great pleasure to welcome our guest today, Dr. Beverly Malone, President and CEO of the National League for Nursing. Dr. Malone is an accomplished nurse with a long and storied history in the profession. She was named one of the 100 most influential people in healthcare in 2021. This prestigious recognition acknowledges and honors individuals who are deemed by their peers and the senior editors of Modern Healthcare to have made the most impact and exhibited the strongest leadership in healthcare. This is the fifth time in the past decade that Dr. Malone has been included in this very elite group. So who better to talk with us about where we stand in our profession today and what we should be looking to do? So welcome, Dr. Malone. I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you.
Wonderful. So the one question I think we all have as nurse leaders is, what do we do today to avert the crisis that our profession is in? When we look at the number of people leaving nursing, the young graduates who are in their jobs for 3, 6 months, 90 days, making decisions to leave, and the severe shortage across the country.
Well, in many ways, this is not a new issue. There's always been quite a heavy number, 20% that first year. But for the first time, the curtain has been pulled back on to the public about who nurses are and what the wonderful work that's done and the stress of managing families as well as older adult families, your younger children families, with everything that goes on with us, whether it's in the hospital or other types of settings. Nurses are always so committed. This is a two-edged sword, I would say. One edge of that sword is the pandemic has been here and is here. Nursing has stepped up to the plate, and it feels like we've been sacrificing nurses. But the other piece is, now you see who we are, what great people nurses are, and why more has to be done. And that really, I think that's the part of the question too. What is more? And more is starting to understand that the well-being of nurses is incredibly important, that you just can't send a nurse or take a nurse off to their clinical setting, whatever that setting is, and say, do the work, that there must be programmatic efforts in there. Takes away some of the administrative burden they carry, takes away some of the mental health stresses that are just carried because they care so much about the patients that we serve. And those are called employee assistance programs frequently. They need to be happening. And that when you're talking about how much staff you have, also talk about how well taken care that staff is by the administration, how colleagues treat other colleagues, how that flow goes between nursing, the nursing department, and other departments. How was that handoff between your school of nursing and your clinical setting that you're in? Did your school of nursing kind of treat you like, we've got them, here they are, kicked them to the curb, and please extend your arms, we'll catch this new graduate coming out here? That there has to be much more of a relationship between all of those groups.
Absolutely. No, thank you.
For those nurses.
You said something, I think, a couple of things I wanted to follow up on, and really, I think they're very, very important. I think that transition to practice piece, and here at the University of South Florida College of Nursing, we're really trying to focus on that handoff much better than we've ever done. I think the value of the academic practice partnership has never been more evident than it is today. But I wanted to ask you, so when you think about those things we should be doing, whose responsibility is it?
Well, I do want to admit that we have been doing some of it, and more than we used to. I believe that the public has, in raising the how we're viewed as nurses and understanding some of the stressors, I think it's given us more room and space to take care of those nurses. I think administrators no longer just sit in their offices and don't also take into account, we've got nurses here, we want to make sure we keep those nurses, and we just can't also throw them to the curb. That we need to have programs that say we value our nursing staff.
Absolutely.
And so I think valuing nursing staff is a big issue. I remember when someone said we're like the glue that holds it all together, but it's invisible glue. So we've got to make sure that we recognize, and whether we're an administrator in nursing or whether we're the overall CEO and whoever it is, that there has to be a level of understanding and commitment to those nursing, not just as staff, but as people who provide incredible care and are reaching out to patients in incredible ways.
Yeah, and so it is that collective ambition. You know, my previous guest in the last episode talked about collective ambition, and it's a kind of coming together as a group. It's practice, it's industry, it's us in academia, it's policymakers coming together to say, you know, how are we going to affect change? We've talked, you know, about well-being. You've talked about it. We certainly talk about it here in our colleges. And there's a lot in the literature now about it as well. But one of the things I am starting to have a bit of a visceral reaction to is that word resiliency. Because I kind of feel that we're going back into a little bit of this blame the victim. You know, this is when you talk about health literacy, right? And you say it's a responsibility of the patient to figure out what we're trying to say to them when they don't have the literacy to do that. So it's the same thing. I kind of feel like nurses need to be more resilient. Can you speak to that, how you think about resiliency and how we should be thinking about it?
Well, I think about it as agility. I think that we're very agile, and that we've always been very agile. We are problem solvers, and we solve based on what's going on with our patients. That is, that work with the patient is the most important to us. We're heavily focused on that. I think resiliency can have a piece to it. I remember someone described it to me as a tree bending instead of breaking. I kind of like that because nurses don't break. We do bend. We understand, and we figure, and like I said, we are incredible problem solvers. So I think it's just a mix up of words that leads to a lack of understanding sometimes how others think about nursing. I hope that those who are doing policy making and putting forth money for extra programs, they understand that nurses require care, just like their patients require care. And that I always say nursing and the patient are two sides of the same coin. It's, you can't do one well without doing the other well, but you cannot ignore one and expect the other to thrive. So I so much admire, and I'm privileged to be a nurse. So I think that's part of it too, understanding the privilege of being a nurse. Yeah. When I wake up in the morning, I have no doubt why I'm here. I know it's because I'm a nurse and because there's a need for me and a need for my colleagues. And I work with amazing people who are called nurses.
That is lovely. You know, my family has always kind of joked about this, that no matter what my title or position was, you know, if I'm at the airport and I'm talking to somebody and they say, what do you do? I say, I'm a nurse. And that's the first thing that comes out. I don't even have to think about it because that's who I am. And it's sort of, it's there. It's just this, you know, just something that I am all the time. And I agree with you, it is a privilege. And I think that's why it makes me sad to see so many people leaving the profession in this horrible state, because they too came into the profession with the same hopes and dreams that you and I probably had, right? Of caring for individuals and taking care of them.
Yeah, well, too, you know, I think that we had to go through the pandemic. I mean, we could have gone through better, easier, I'm sure, but this was the first time we'd had in my lifetime something in this particular way. So I think that nursing education, for one, needs to know that we need to be prepared for the next disaster. And it doesn't have to be a pandemic. It might be a hurricane, but we don't have enough disaster preparation in our curriculum, in our preparation for that student. So I think that's another piece. And so I can't say that without saying faculty have to be prepared, because you just don't prepare students. You have to prepare those who teach, those who provide the teaching. And I think that's what we'll be about. And I'm excited about that. I see that as an opportunity for growth.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you brought up the educational piece, because that's where I was going next. You know, under your direction, I think the National League for Nursing has led us down some really good paths, trailblazed some paths for us, looking especially at diversity and inclusion and looking at our curriculum. What's next for you as you think about the shortage and what we're experiencing in a post-pandemic world? What's next for you in the NLN?
There are two things that cause a shortage: not enough faculty and not enough clinical placements. Those are the primary things. I know there's others, but those are primary. And so the NLN right now is working with two companies. Well, you've got the American Heart Association and Laird All Medical. And we're working around a program called RQI. It's Resuscitation Quality Improvement. And it's based on competencies and on nursing research, which gets me very, Dr. Marilyn Orman, her original research around this, that if you do it more frequently, you'll retain those skills. That's called competency-based learning. And so NLN is very excited about the opportunity to lead in the area of competency-based learning. And the other, we just have an Institute of Social Health Determinants. We just did that with our colleagues at Walden University. We're so excited about that, because you can't talk about diversity and inclusion without talking about determinants of social health. I mean, it's all part of it. So we are committed to that, committed to making sure that everywhere we go, there is an inclusionary piece of understanding diversity, that it's not just about counting numbers. It's really about an understanding that it's inclusion. I'm a number, thank you very much, but I'd like to be more than a number. I want to be involved. I want to see, where is the escalator that gets me to a different level of the system? Would somebody please explain that to me? That's mentoring. Having mentors is very important.
Absolutely. We're all watching to see, you know, what directions you will help us go. And I had such a fangirl moment when you mentioned Dr. Orman, because she's really done some such solid work, I think, in the area. And that whole competency-based curriculum ties in very well, of course, with our essentials. So we are definitely excited for that. And I look forward to having you back maybe in a little bit as we get into hopefully the post-pandemic world, to see, you know, what we need to be doing next. But I want to thank you for your time and your insights today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Absolutely. Take care.
You can learn more about the USF College of Nursing at health.usf.edu/nursing. Until next time, here's to trailblazing your own path.